Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the FBN Holdings Full Year 2018 and First Quarter 2019 Financial Results Conference Call. This call is being recorded. Following an overview by the GMD of FBN Holdings, an interactive question and answer session will be available. I would now like to hand the call over to Mr. UK Eke, Group Managing Director of FBN Holdings. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Good morning and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us on this investor and analyst presentation for the FBN Holdings full year 2018 and first quarter 2019 results. My name is UK Eke, the Group Managing Director. And on this call with me are my colleagues from the Commercial Bank, the Managing Director, Dr. Shola Adedita. And we have Ini Ebong, the Treasurer. The CFO of the Commercial Bank is also here, Patrick Yamabo. The CRO of the Commercial Bank, Segun Alabioshu, is here. And I have my colleague from the Merchant Bank, Kayode Akinkugbe, the Managing Director. And finally, I have the CFO of FBN Holdings PLC, Wale Ariyibi. We had earlier posted this presentation to our website, and I hope you found time to look through the presentation. I'd like to start on slide 6, which basically provides the context on the macro that prevailed during the year under review, though we have stretched it to 2016 when we took charge as management. I think there's broad consensus and agreement that 2018 was challenging overall, with inflationary pressure, particularly in the first half of 2018, even though it moderated in the second half 2018. On the oil production, we are steady at 1.7 million barrels per day, and also aided by a very stable oil price, certainly above the budget benchmark price of $60, we're able to accrete significantly to our foreign reserves, which peaked to about $48 billion in second quarter of last year. Now, the combined effect of this is that Central Bank of Nigeria was able to maintain relatively stable FX regime at both the NAFEX market and also the central bank window. Moving on to slide 7, we have indicated some of the regulatory developments during 2018. We had discussed extensively some of these points in the previous calls, so I'll just restrict myself to one or two developments that impacted us or will still impact us going forward. By the fourth quarter of 2018, Central Bank issued guidelines for licensing of payment service banks. We believe this will change significantly the competitive environment in the medium to long term, but as a group, we are fully ready and prepared, and we do think that we'll continue to defend our market share in that space based on the platforms we have built over time. Now, because we also play in the insurance space, I'd like to call out the NICOM's prescription for tier-based minimum solvency capital framework. Even though this was suspended by the fourth quarter of 2018, I can confirm that we're also ready to fully comply with the capital requirements. Now, for 2019, Central Bank signaled a change in direction, and I'm speaking to the NPR, which was reduced by 50 bps to 13.5%. And I think this was basically to align with fiscal policy expectations of economic growth. Now, I'll move to slide 9, And from here, I want to highlight some of the commitments that we made to the market. In the context of our three-year strategic planning program, which we published 2017 and ending in 2019. The year under review 2018 represents, therefore, the penultimate year of our three-year SPP. And we anchored the plan on three major pillars. One was around revenue generation, particularly in a diversified way, taking into account the broad offering of the group. The second was around asset quality, where we made a commitment to completely overhaul the risk architecture and deliver very sound loan book or portfolio. The third was around costs and capital efficiency, where we made a commitment to rein in costs and rebuild our capital buffers. Right on that slide, you will see the enablers we identified that we have also leveraged to deliver on these commitments: the people, processes, innovation, synergy, and technology. I will get into more details in subsequent slides. Now, on slide 10, we begin to see the credit risk governance in the commercial bank now operating best-in-class standards. And we are proud to report that the vintage NPL, i.e. loans we have booked in the last 2 years, certainly reporting less than 1% NPL. And the overall cost of risk is now around about 2.5%. Again, to emphasize, we have completely overhauled our entire risk management architecture. We have achieved a coverage ratio of about 89%, and the cost of risk now about 2.5%. I am happy to report that we have fully resolved and fully provisioned and indeed written off our largest and most difficult NPLs, particularly Ontario and Atlantic Energy. For us, this is a major landmark which market should be aware of, and we do think it will signpost the beginning of great things that will happen, not just in terms of loan book growth, but also revenue generation. Slide 11 speaks to revenue generation. We have recorded very huge success in our quest to drive non-interest revenues through our digital offerings and also increase income from non-banking subsidiaries. We are currently the undisputed leader in digital solutions and agency banking, and this is happening in Africa's largest retail market. We do believe that this represents for us a strong bragging right, and we're going to leverage some of these assets to improve profitability. Specifically, I'd like to confirm that our digital channels customer base currently exceeds 10 million, again, underpinning our strength in that space. We are the only bank in Nigeria today that's fully operational in every state, in every local government, across the country, and operating with over 20,000 agents. This is on the first money agent offering, and the target for us by end of 2019 is to exceed 30,000 agents. Now, the First Bank Digital Lab was established in 2018, and this is basically to harness the opportunities that exist in the fintech space. We are looking at collaboration and partnership with the fintechs. And I'd like to confirm also that we have successfully cut over about 85% of all customer-generated transactions into alternative platforms, so they no longer have to transact through bricks and mortar. Again, these are extraordinary achievements in a very challenging and competitive environment. Moving on to slide 12, around operational efficiency. We continue to do very well in liability generation, and we are proud that we have an excellent funding platform which obviously results in low cost and diversified and stable funding base. The results we are showcasing today shows for 2018 full year, deposits grew 10.9%, but more importantly, low-cost deposits continue to grow and currently represent about 86% of total deposits as at end of March 2019. And again, we are proud to say that our savings bucket, the savings deposit base, is about 1.2 trillion naira, which makes us clearly the biggest in that space in Nigeria. Now, asset quality and capital, I'd like to combine that slide 13, where we have discussed what we have done in terms of restructuring the balance sheet without diluting current shareholders. And so we have demonstrated very clearly best-in-class capital management capability. We made a promise to the market 3 years ago that even though it was challenging, we are going to accrete capital through retention of profit, particularly the commercial bank. And therefore, we have kept to that promise. And to your right, you will see the capital ratios. And by year end, we closed at 17.3%. And for Q1, we are at 16.5%. Again, these are strong capital buffers sufficient for the growth that we intend to achieve for current year, even as we expect to ramp up profitability and accrete further. So we would like to reassure that we will continue to sustain our best-in-class operations. We will continue to accrete organically without recourse to the market, and we would remain focused on building a fortress balance sheet capable of pivoting our future when risk assets enabled growth regimes. I'll then go to slide 15. Here we want to show that even though we have covered sufficient grounds and delivered on the promises we made to a large extent, there are still a few areas we need to improve on. Specifically, I'd like to take you to slide 16, and the first point to call out there is on the costs, where we saw a spike year on year, but we are committed absolutely to reining in costs, even as we significantly invest for the future. The point being made is that we will not shy away from investing in sustainable growth, even though they may result in one-time cost increases. We believe this assures the future for us. And so if you look at the presentation, operating expenses grew by 9.7% year on year, clearly below inflation. But if you normalize for non-recurrent costs, OPEX growth in first quarter of 2019 was 12.1%, translating to an effective cost-to-income ratio, again, for 2019 first quarter of 60.6%. I need to emphasize that given the sheer size and scale of our platforms, it is pretty difficult to fall within a range that we would have expected or within just 1 year. But a combination of revenue growth and also a clear and sustainable cost containment measure or steps will result in a more normalized cost to income ratio, and I will give you the guidance when we get to that slide. Now, on slide 17, the second area of focus for us, which is priority, is the NPL. Clearly, NPL ratio of 25.9% exceeded the guidance we gave for 2018 full year. But then we have a path, as we will show you further down the presentation or during the Q&A, we have a path that will result in a single-digit NPL by 2019. This is a commitment we are giving, and we will stand by that. On that same slide, we make a commitment that we will continue to improve on the coverage ratio, which currently is indeed above 100% under IFRS 9 rules. And so for us, 2019 remains a critical watershed for us at NBN Holdings. In line with the commitments we have made, we are not shifting the goalposts. We are committed to delivering on all the numbers we gave. So we reiterate our commitment to addressing all the structural issues, the balance sheet repairs, aggressively growing the revenue base and diversifying them. And also we undertake to fast-track initiatives around human capital transformation, even though this may result in one-time costs. The key thing to take away from this slide is that we're not going to carry forward legacy issues into 2020. All of those issues will end in 2019 in line with commitments we made. Slide 19 gives the effect or the result of all the initiatives I have highlighted. And so we are happy to report that profit before tax for 2018 was 65.3 billion naira, up nearly 20% year on year. And profit after tax was also up 31% year on year to 59.7 billion. Earnings per share inched up by 43% to 1.65 naira. Non-interest income increased by 15.8% year on year, closing at 1.32 billion naira. And electronic banking revenue contribution to the non-interest revenue was also up 22% to 25.8%. Our credit impairment was down 42% year on year, which underscores our strong focus on resolving all the legacy issues highlighted previously. We are improving the capital absorbing capacity with NPL coverage at 78%. Again, I emphasize, with Atlantic Energy now fully provisioned. For 2019 first quarter, profit before tax was 19.3 billion, up 2.6%, and profit after tax was up also by 6.9% to 15.8 billion naira. Now, non-interest income was up 21.8%, closing at 30.2 billion. Electronic banking portion of that is about 33.3%. Again, sustaining the reduction in impairment charges, we are seeing a 45.3% year-on-year decline in impairment charge, reinforcing our commitment and drive to improving the asset quality. Now, if you normalize for associated costs as listed previously, operating expenses grew by 12.1%. In summary, ours has been a recovery story achieved through a very difficult period. And so we are delighted that we have turned the corner and we have taken out all the impediments to growth, and therefore we are optimistic that we will deliver the commitments we make. What are those commitments? I'll take you to slide 27, where we have listed the guidance for 2019 financial year. We believe that we can deliver ROE at between 12 to 14%, the ROA 1 to 1.5%, our cost-to-income ratio will be within the band of 58 to 62%. Cost of risk, 3.5 to 4%. Of course, you'll understand why, because we are adopting or we have adopted the IFRS 9 on expected loss basis. Cost of funds will continue to maintain very decent cost of funds between 3 and 4%. And then our NIM will be within the band of 7 to 8%, I'm sorry. And then deposit growth will sustain growth in that area above 10%. Net loans, I think we were all wrong last year. The market was completely wrong. We thought we were going to record growth, but across the industry, it was either flattish or reduction are negative. But we do believe that this year we are going to achieve around about 5% growth in the loan book. And NPL, for emphasis, would be able to deliver sub 10% NPL ratio. And this will be achieved through a combination of restructure, recovery, write-off, and loan growth. I would like to end my presentation here and open it up for questions and answers. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause now to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We will now take our first question from Tolu of Telemer. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for hosting today's call. I have a few questions on asset quality, capital, liquidity, and costs. So first on asset quality, thank you for the guidance on Atlantic Energy. Can you just confirm that it was the loan was fully provisioned and not fully written off? And in previous calls, you'd mentioned that it was possible that you might write off all or part of that loan by the end of this year if there was no resolution to the ongoing court cases and so on. Can you give us an update on that, please? And also related to asset quality, could you please tell us how Ontario was resolved? Were the assets sold? And just for my benefit on Aiteo, can you confirm that it's no longer classified as a non-performing loan? Then on capital, again, thank you for being very clear on the need for no fresh capital, but does that include Tier 2 as well as Tier 1? And does FBN intend to call the Tier 2 $450 million bond, which is callable later this year? And could you maybe give us your Tier 1 and total capital ratios at the end of March without the transitional arrangements from the CBN? And then on liquidity, is there any plan to return to the dollar Eurobond market? And finally, on costs, any detail that you can give on the increases in non-regulatory costs in the quarter would be really appreciated, especially the operating and other losses and professional fees. Were those all related to digital banking and IT, or were there other drivers behind those costs? Thank you.
Thank you. Can we take another set of questions, please?
We will now take our next question from Toyosi Oni of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, and thank you very much for hosting this call. My first question is also on asset quality. Please, can you provide a detailed explanation on what's going on with asset quality at the bank? The expectation was that with the resolution of these high-profile names, there would be a marked improvement in banks, especially when we consider how much was actually written off. And further to that, is there a risk that the bank will not deliver on the 2019 promise of a clean book? Can you please explain this path that has been identified to us so that we have a better understanding of where the bank is going as regards asset quality? My second question is on the recent appointment of Michael Anima, who played a significant role in driving profits for your competitor. will we likely see similar earnings from FBN going forward? And my final question is regarding an update on senior management and any changes that are to come and the continuity plan for the bank going forward. Thank you very much.
Sorry, the last question, can you repeat it, please?
So the last question was an update on any senior management changes to come and what the continuity plan for the bank is currently.
You have the question around the options of the
staff. All right, we're going to respond to the questions now. Chairman.
Thank you for the questions. Atlantic Energy, we confirm that we are fully provisioned, but not written off. We continue to engage the government for active resolution of the issues. As confirmed the last time, the board of FBN Holdings and the bank will take appropriate decision at the right time, but we remain committed to resolution of AE. On Ontario asset, Ontario was resolved through a combination of asset realization and haircut. We did not go to court, so it was a mutual understanding and exit. So we have the assets that are currently being realized. In the last 1.5 years, we've had a difficult macroeconomic environment that might have affected realization timely. However, that is on course. We confirm that ITO is not an NPL. Indeed, ITO produces about 100,000 barrels per day. And so for a company that is producing that in an economy that is big as this, and looking at oil price above 60 in the last 12 months, I mean, you appreciate the quantum of cash flow that passes through ITO. Again, on asset quality as raised by Tolu, we've seen the evolution of NPL and the movement from 22.8% 2017 to 25.9% 2019. And it was just because we adopted a more aggressive IFRS 9 outlook and framework, where perhaps one of the few banks adopted the Moody's model in the sixth step. If I'm not wrong, I think it's only Citibank that joined us in doing that in the market. And so that model, we decided as a bank to remain conservative and aggressive in resolving the asset quality issue, and we went ahead with Moody's. And so that led to that. So you have some accounts that miss payments, maybe a day or two, but because it did not meet the IFRS 9 strict definition, we were moved to C3. Now, going through the year, many of them will fall back to stage two because we have clear line of sight into their cash flow and how the cash flow will impact the books, and over two quarters they will be revised. Well, we note the fact that there's no risk to the single digit NPL we have committed to.
Okay, speaking to liquidity, the Tier 2 instrument we have out there, I mean, arguably, aggregate U.S. dollar liquidity for the bank has improved in the course of the last 2 years, and that was evidenced by our call and repayment of earlier bond last year. Now, given the range of financing options available to the bank, the fact that the bank still retains significant market access, we'll continue to explore all options available to the bank as it relates to the instrument in question. As you know, given it was issued as an old-style 7 non-call 5 format, the capital benefit anyway has dropped off, or will drop off in the course of this year. So the risk to capital is negligible there. So At this stage, we're looking at the comparable options available to the bank, and in the course of the next couple of months, well before the call date, we will take the necessary steps with regards to what we need to do for long-term financing. So that will be that.
Okay. Good day, everyone. This is Patrick. So there are a couple of questions that I'll respond to. The first has to do with Chairwan. We reiterate our commitment to the fact that there's no need to raise Tier 1 capital. As explained earlier, and as you have seen from our results, looking at the bank at the current CAR levels, we are comfortable. If you lay on top of that the guidance we've given for loan growth, the effective capital that will be consumed is less than 0.5%. So again, coming out of the business needs for 2019, we do not see any capital pressure. Thirdly, as you would have noticed from our financials, the level of provisions we're making every quarter or every, when projected for the whole year, would accrete about 200 basis points of CAR that will be strictly dedicated managing impairment charge. On top of that, there's an additional 200 basis points that would accrete to retained earnings. Again, that is capital buffer. So our viewpoint, frankly, is from the business needs for this year, our current capital level, the rate at which we're accreting earnings, plus the impairment charge we've taken on our books, which again reflects the organic capital generative capacity of the balance sheet, we are very comfortable with our capital position. This is the same story we've always said the last 3 years. We've committed to it, and we don't see anything changing that this year. The second question around what our CAR levels will be without accommodation is still north of 10%. So again, we are still very comfortable. The amortization process will take in about 30 billion each year. Like I just explained, our earnings capacity, what we accrete retained earnings, will easily take care of that. Our business needs nonetheless, we're in a very comfortable place. The last question has to do with our OPEX and the growth noted year on year, and perhaps some insight into what is driving those costs. So there are a couple of things that have driven our OPEX growth, but I think most of them were touched on in the earlier discussion by the group managing director. The first is really around regulatory. Between the expected cost increase coming out of our planned deposits and growth for this year, plus the change to AMCON rules, when you look at things on a year-on-year basis, you can easily understand how our OPEX will grow anything between 2.5 and 3 billion. If you lay on top of that just the sheer act of inflation and you assume, for example, a 10% inflation impact, you can annualize that and then translate that to quarterly levels. You recognize how you can easily incur additional 5 billion increase in OPEX. Now, something we've consistently said throughout is that we're making strategic investments. Yes, we're restructuring the business. Yes, we are growing the business, but we are also as a result, we're making investments in IT, we're incurring consultants and costed consultants, and those are showing up here. But as we've done the last couple of years, we have tried to keep them under control. Finally, I wouldn't want to dwell on the last bit,
there are certain, as part of our restructuring efforts, and also related to HR, we've recognized certain one-time restructuring costs in this quarter. So these are really the gamut of things that have increased our OPEX. We understand where the OPEX is coming, growth is coming from, but all this growth points towards positioning the institution for a much better growth in the future. Thank you.
To answer the last question on senior management, all that we could say is that the leadership of our institution will remain essentially intact. Periodically, depending on opportunity to enrich and enhance the team, we will go to the market and we will hire good people. The fact that we'll be able to attract the Mr. Anima that you refer to clearly signals the fact that we have the capacity to attract good people. Like I said, we're always ready. We have the capacity to attract good people. So overall, the leadership team that has taken us this far remains intact, and we would continuously enrich and enhance on need basis.
Okay, thank you. Can we take additional questions, please?
All right, next question comes from Ronak Gudia of EFG Hermes. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thanks for the presentation and taking our questions. My first question, well, most of my questions are really just a follow-up of the previous callers. Firstly, on ITEO, like you said, the loan remains performing. But from what we read in the press, it seems like there's some uncertainty about the underlying license for that asset. So could you just confirm if the license has been renewed? So that's my first question. My second question is on to do with your NPLs. I mean, I get your point, you know, that the increase in NPLs was driven by IFRS 9. But based on the conversations we were having throughout last year, from starting from the first quarter, management were consistent that IFRS 9 was fully implemented from the first quarter. So could you just highlight why there was a surprising increase in the fourth quarter related to IFRS 9, especially since, you know, once I take into consideration the amount of loans that you wrote off, it seems like the underlying NPL ratio was as high as 30%, if not slightly higher, which is much, much higher than what management guidance was throughout the year. So just trying to understand where the surprise came from in the fourth quarter. And lastly, on your NPL ratio guidance for this year, 10%. Again, this is just going back to last year. There was a big surprise. It was a big negative. So how confident should we be that this NPL ratio will be achieved this year? Sorry, and just one final one. On your CAR ratio, Patrick, you mentioned that on a fully adjusted IFRS 9 basis, we should knock off the capital adequacy ratio by 10%. Your CAR ratio on the presentation was 16.5%, so if we knock off 10%, should we say that the CAR ratio at the bank level is now almost as high as 15% or so? If you could just confirm what the actual number is, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Rona. On ITU, we are aware that all royalty payments have been made by ITU, and so we await the license renewal. But we don't see any threat to the license renewal itself because the conditions for renewal of license has been met.
Sure, but isn't there some core challenge to the license being renewed, some environmental case?
No, because the environmental cases were caused by sabotage from the environment, not by the company. So the Nebe Creek is not used alone by ITO, and so by other oil majors. And so when Nebe Creek is tampered with, even with Shell, because this flows to Shell export terminal. So ITO S for True, Shell, S for Terminal. So Shell also used Nembe Creek. So if Nembe Creek is affected, it's not only ITO. So when you have that, it's not because they fail to comply with environmental issues, but because of the environment itself and the vulnerability of Nembe trunk terminal.
Okay.
Now, on the single-digit MPL, please be confident and be confident that a single-digit MPL will be achieved in 2019. We have clear sight to how we are going to do that. And if you look at the fact that coverage ratio was 82% in Q1. So if we decide, you know, in there to realize asset and take logical haircuts, I mean, it's just possible that we're going to have a single-digit MPL working through that. Now, on what happened between Q3 and year-end, and we're consistent with our commitment that IFRS 9 will not throw up surprises. However, the model that we're using earlier in estimating variables were different from Moody's. In Q4, when Moody's template model came on board and we ran our numbers, we saw that movement and timing were more important and could shape things. So we decided to go aggressive and took them in, knowing fully well that there are timing issues, they are not capacity issues. And for timing issues, it can only be healed by time. And so over time, we believe that at worst, when you appear at year end, within two quarters of the following year, you can get yourself back to three. It's a better and conservative approach than to pack it in stage two and assume that it will not, and then it will be. So for us, we felt was better, was more transparent and conservative, decisive, for us to put it in three and wait, and then we'll come back to two when the wrong well.
Okay, but if you could just elaborate some of the major differences between the model you are using and some of the other banks that you're using, because you say it's only two banks in Nigeria that are using the stringent model.
Well, Ronak, we can only speak to our model, as you know.
Okay.
We cannot speculate on the robustness of other models being used by other banks. The reference that should be germane for this conversation is that we have adopted best in class. And even though it threw up numbers that were, in quotes, adverse to our own preferred position, we are quick to adopt it regardless. And that is also because we wanted to fully resolve all the legacy issues so that they would not bother us or detain us post-2019. I believe that is a very prudent way to look at it.
Okay.
Patrick will take the question on CAR.
Yeah, so Ronak, you asked a question on CAR. I guess you were trying to understand exactly the full impact on our CAR.
Mm-hmm.
So what I said earlier on was that our CAR was about 16.5%, but the full impact is still north of 10%. So in other words, without the transition adjustment, we are still north of 10%. Now, and then just to add to that, and you may have noticed it, if you take a look at our financials, we did have about 32 billion locked out of retained earnings into regulatory risk reserve. Indeed, with that 33, and in reality, doing that is kind of inconsistent with ECL, but that's the case with us. If you release that, that in itself is at least 100 bits of capital. I'm just sitting there. So like I said earlier on, we are pretty comfortable from a capital position.
Okay. I mean, my view is, I mean, obviously you've got 4 years to regularize this from, you've got the moratorium from the CBN. But, you know, obviously that's a ratio that the management will have to keep an eye on. And in the medium term, I mean, in the short term, we're not seeing any significant pickup in loan growth within the economy due to various reasons. But if they were to pick up, it seems like First Bank could further continue to lose market share because you're still in the mode of repairing your balance sheet, whereas everybody else could start gaining market share because their capital ratios are much stronger. Is that something that you're concerned about?
No, and I'll explain why. So if we've got 3 years, and if you look at our figures, that's about 30 billion each year. 30 billion each year is capital that I generate in 3 to 6 months. So from an earnings perspective, after taking out 200 bits worth of car through impairment charge, I can still take care of that in 6 months. Now, if we look at 2019 specifically, my risk-weighted asset growth projections are really limited. So in summary, the capital position is solid. We have the ability to grow the business the way we want to, and we are quite comfortable where we are. Think about it. By next year, when our impairment charge will drop, that 200 bits of car we're speaking about, which is 60 billion, will almost take us, will basically take us out of everything. So we're quite comfortable.
Okay. Perfect. And sorry, just one quick final one. Maybe this one's for Inik. If I look at your investment securities yield, the blended average yield last year was, by my estimate, was around 8.3%. And even in the first quarter, it was about 9.3%, which is significantly lower than what the treasury bill yields are right now, which is anywhere between 12 to, let's say, as high as 15%. So why is the effective yield for you so much lower?
Well, I guess it's a function of the portfolio mix that we have at this point in time. Again, we've had to build significant flexibility into our investment securities bucket because of the need to be relatively nimble as we deal with a number of issues and working through the balance sheet. But again, it's more environmental, and as we get better clarity around the monetary policy direction of the central bank, and we move away more from balance sheet repair mode to more of investing, then one will be better positioned to take advantage of market opportunities.
Okay. Thank you, Ronak. Let's take more questions, please.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Michael Oyeleye of Stanbic IBTC Pension. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for the presentation. My questions are, first of all, on Nine Mobile, if you could give us an update on where that is and what level of provision and haircut you've taken. My second question is on what are the potential risks that you see to meeting your single-digit NPL guidance for 2019. And then my third question is, if you could, or if it's possible, you could give us a breakdown or a rundown of what was the write-off that was taken in 2018. And my fourth question is, what level of CAR, when you're taking on full impact, what level of CAR would you say will sustain a comfortable level of dividend payment from the commercial bank? Thank you very much.
Nine Mobile was resolved in 2018. We got payment like other banks. We took haircut like other banks. And so restructuring was completed. We don't see any heightened risk to attainment of single-digit NPL. The biggest risk was then Atlantic Energy, and we confronted that in 2018 and fully provided for it. And once Atlantic Energy is out, there's no other material NPL that can actually take us out of course. On the breakdown of return of assets, I will say that you permit us not to go by name, because we also need to protect the customers. But if we, on a bilateral basis, we might be able to discuss.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And then I think you asked a question around car, what we think will be sustainable car. Is that correct?
Yes, on full impact IFRS 9 for the commercial bank.
Okay. We're currently at 16.5%. On our growth project, in terms of the risk-weighted asset, we would not even consume up to 0.5, so pretty comfortable. Lay on top of that the profits we plan to make this year, we're easily anywhere between 17.5 and 18%. How much car do we really need to drive the business? Quite frankly, regulatory says 15 or 16, depending on how you want to spin it. We are comfortable with anything north of 17%. As we've consistently explained to the investment community, we've made the decisions around dividend payment as necessary to ensure that the commercial bank has all the capital it needs to drive business and to ensure a robust balance sheet. And we still maintain that. So in summary, how to grow the business, frankly, we are comfortable with anything more than 17%. For this year, we would easily accrete more than that by the end of the year.
Okay, thank you. Let's take more questions.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you. We will now take our next question from Caitlin Byrne. Please go ahead, Caitlin.
Hi, thanks very much for the call. I just want to find out why your cost of risk guidance at 3.5% to 4% is still so high, given how many, you know, how much provision you've already taken, and that your NPL on your legacy book is so low. I would think 3.5% to 4% seems quite high. The other question is, the asset management business in Q1 seems to have gone backwards. Maybe you could just give us some color on what's happening in that division. And then on your increased agency and digital banking, can you give us some insight into how that's going to sort of drive cost reduction going forward in the sort of on a 3 to 5 year basis? Will you be able to sort of reduce branch sizes? Will you be able to reduce number of branches? Or is it more that it drives the non-interest revenue side? Thanks.
Thanks. The cost of risk guided to be between 3.5 to 4. Just due to two things. One, clean up. It's our intention that 2019 single digits must be real. So we will clean up. At 82% coverage, we want to move close to 100 so that we are in a better position to clean and see how buffer of what we have. And the implication of that is that there will be impairment charges to P&L for the year. That also signaling that we will make more money in the year for us to do this impairment. Two is that we will grow loans. And looking at our model, there are few investment grade names in the industry. So if you have few investment grade names, it means that many will be moderate risk assets, and the impairment charge might be also be modest or moderate also, which means that you need to also make provision for that in doing your cost of risk for the year, which we have done.
Okay.
Yeah.
We will now take our next question from Muyua Oni. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for the presentation and taking questions. So I have about three questions. First, just trying to understand if there. So I know you highlighted cleanup as a key driver for where your cost of risk is right now. But I want to understand if there are other pressures you see and then where you expect cost of risk to settle in the medium term. So once you've gone past this cleanup mode, where how should we be modeling your impairment ratios? Secondly, on your e-banking contribution, so it's been growing steadily and want to understand where you expect that figure to settle, so e-bank as a contribution to your non-interest revenues, and then try to understand what kind of risks you see to that income line. So beyond potential competition from payment service banks, do you see regulatory risks such as potential downward moderation of fees by the central bank as a risk? So more like with COTs as well, just to see how we should be considering risk to that income line. And then thirdly, on your credit growth figure, want to understand drivers of that 5%. So where do you expect loan growth to come from? But secondly as well, just looking at the Nigerian economy, how do you expect, or what kind of levers do you expect to stimulate loan growth going forward, and what kind of credit growth levels do you expect as a business going forward?
Yeah.
Those are my questions.
Okay. For the cost of risk, we guided earlier that post-2019, that we will see that cost of risk will be below 2%. And if you've seen what we did in 2018, we moved substantially from 6.4 in 2017 to 3.5, which is almost like 50% reduction, and what we plan for 2019. But 2019 being the cleanup year, the final cleanup year, and that is why we are saying 3.5 to 4%, because we just want to ensure that we don't leave anything behind, or at least we don't leave anything that could actually pose any risk to us post-2019. On the loan growth, yeah, we said around 5%. We believe that the manufacturing sector, the export, non-oil export, as government is promoting same, general commerce, and consumer loans are areas or sectors of growth. You will agree with me that if minimum wage has been put forward is actualized, that the economy will flourish, and that will affect aggregate demand, that will also allow the manufacturing company to be able to invest. They all have all kind of, I mean, they have implications for the entire economy, and because purchasing power will be enhanced and the circular flow of funds will take the natural course.
I'd like to introduce my colleague Chuma Ezirim, who is the group executive e-business and retail products, to respond to the question on e-banking and what our expectations are, particularly the threat of PSVs and possibly central bank regulating charges or costs. Chuma.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Last year, we grew our digital banking revenue by about 30%. this year, you know, we're targeting a minimum of 50%. The growth will come largely from what we're doing around agency banking. Okay, today we have about 20,000 agents, you know, in our network. We plan to grow that by minimum 50%, you know, so it's about 30,000, you know, before the end of the year. If we achieve that, okay, we will see at least minimum, you know, about 500% growth, you know, in revenue. Secondly, we are also, you know, we are going to be very aggressive in growing our customer accounts. Okay, you know, so we also see that, you know, and besides that will lead, you know, to growth in the revenue. Thirdly, we've been approached by several stakeholders in the industry for collaboration. I've also approached some, okay, for strategic partnership. You know, one of the things we're implementing this year is our open banking, you know, strategy, which will help us, you know, to leverage, the assets we've made, the investments we've made in our assets, okay, to grow revenue. Thirdly, on digital channels, you know, specifically the USSD and our app, you know, mobile app, we are enhancing the offerings, okay, you know, by introducing additional services. So we believe that, you know, I mean, by the time we effectively deploy all this, you know, we should, you know, grow, you know, the revenue, you know, meet our revenue target. On the payment services banks, you know, we are part of the delegation that went to, you know, India, okay, where we copied or, you know, the model. It will depend on how central bank, you know, regulates, you know, that, you know, scheme. If it is regulated the way it is done in India, okay, it might be a challenge. You know, that might be, you know, it might be, you know, the new banks, okay, might struggle. But having said that, we see opportunities for strategic partnership, okay, and we've been approached, you know, by the major telcos and some of the companies that have applied for license, okay, for strategic partnership, based on, you know, what they see as, you know, our strategic position in the industry. I also agree with you that there might be pressure on the fee structure, especially, you know, on the digital channels. But we see rather, you know, opportunities on the pressure that will be exerted on the digital acceptance channels, especially our agent network. Okay, we know that if the telcos are allowed to issue wallets, you know, they certainly do not have the acceptance, you know, structure, okay, you know, to manage, you know, the increase in the number of wallets that are going to, you know, issue. So we also see that as a revenue opportunity. Okay, and then thirdly, you know, we also see maybe some pressure on deposits, okay, you know, because if they are allowed, you know, to issue wallets, okay, without, you know, BVN, that might affect, you know, our, you know, deposits.
Thank you very much, Chuma. Can we take more questions, please?
Thank you. All right. Next question comes from Segun Akinwale of Arm Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. So I just have a few questions as regards MPL. I know it's been flogged, but I just want to get some clarity. So you mentioned that you're looking at MPL dropping to 10% by the end of the year, which by my own calculation means that you are looking at your MPL settling at about 207 billion by the end of the year from current levels. So if my calculation is right, that means you're looking at wiping about 316 billion of your MPL. So my question really relates to this. How much, because I'm seeing your Atlantic Energy exposure, based on my own calculation, is about 160 billion. But the calculation I'm seeing for what you're likely to wipe off of your loans is about 316 billion. Can you guide to which other part of your loans that will be part of these loans that you're looking at writing off before the end of the year that will take your MPL to 10%? And also, that's one. Number two, you mentioned that you're looking at growing loans this year. And I'm wondering, the loans you're planning to grow, is it post this write-off from your gross loans, or are with the loan you're planning to grow, where would they come from? So I'm not clear how you plan to grow loans when you're looking at writing off as much as 300 billion from your loan book. So can you just give me clarity to this and how you plan to make this happen, please?
Let me start with the write-off. The write-off does not affect loan growth. The provision is there in other liabilities. It's actually adjusted for it. So in real sense, you can actually add the provision to capital because it's there. So you can set it up. So it doesn't affect write-off of AE or whatever. Or write-off AE does not affect loan creation. So if you have at the back of your mind, just adjust for it. So net loans is what now becomes the driver and not gross loan. On how we will get to 10% NPL, it will be a combination of loan recovery, loan restructuring, loan growth, and loan write-off. We appreciate that in resolving the assets, there will be even a realization of the assets where you have collaterals, that you will still take, we might likely take haircuts in resolution of that. So we've taken that into consideration. We have a number of assets that that we believe that we will resolve within 2019. Apart from AE, there's no other NPL that is more than 1.5% of loan book. So it is easier for us to take the bullet on each of those ones if we decide to. It's also easier for us to realize those assets because they are not that too big for us to sell. So in doing that, we have clear sights on what we will do to get where we are. We appreciate the loan growth issue, and we know that Q1 is gone for the economy. But for the remaining three quarters of the year, there are opportunities for loan growth. And today, because of IFRS 9, all loans don't have the same risk weight. So if I decide to go for an investment grade name, and I have a PD of 0.02, even if I do 100 billion there, it doesn't have so much impact on my capital or on my risk-weighted asset materially, because it's not exactly before where all loans have the same weight of 100%. So we have clear sights on how we will do that.
I could have a catch-up. You mentioned here that you're looking at cost of risk between 3.5 to 4%. And I'm wondering, how much are you looking at growing your profitability that you think having a cost of risk of about 3 to 5% will not affect your capital adequacy, your retained earnings, or your overall earnings at the end of the year, that will not impact your capital adequacy ratio further? I'm just trying to get to how much are you looking at growing your operating profit that it will be offset by any additional provisioning.
Okay. Again, loan growth is not synonymous with profitability.
I'm saying, you say you're looking at doing an additional cost of provisioning, cost of risk. You are getting to a cost of risk between 3.5% to 4%. And at the same time, you're saying you are looking at capital adequacy ratio coming down. So I'm now wondering, how much profitability are you looking at making that having a 4% cost of risk will still give you enough to retain for the year that will now support your capital adequacy ratio? Or are you seeing that your risk-weighted asset is going to decline faster than the decline you are going to see in your risk-weighted asset?
Okay.
Awesome.
This is Patrick. The presentation we shared, right, actually provided guidance. I think from the guidance there, you will be able to most of your questions are actually answered in there. So in there, we've gathered around ROE, ROA, and the ROE and ROA reflects the cost of risk assumptions that we've made.
Okay, all right, thanks. Sorry, during the presentation, you mentioned something about amortization of IFRS 9. You mentioned that it's going to take you between 30 billion annually. Is that correct? Can you please correct that, please?
Okay, couple of things. So, yes, if we were to go through the full cycle, 30 billion annually over the next 3 years, but you also said something alongside, which is we actually have 32 billion ring fence as regulatory risk reserve. So in some ways,
ring fence.
32 billion ring fence as regulatory risk reserve.
Okay.
If that was released, our CAR will not even be 16.5 now, it will be 17.5. And just to put the CAR in perspective, every percentage translates into about 280 billion in risk-weighted assets.
Okay.
So that's very chunky stuff. The other thing I said was, in spite of the impairment charge we plan to take, the accretion to earnings will translate into 2% CAR every 6 months.
Okay.
And what that means is, and 2% CAR every 6 months is north of 60 billion. So again, easily this year, if I wanted to take care of that middle of the year, I could easily take care of that middle of the year. I also mentioned that effective next year, when we expect our cost of risk to normalize, all this impairment charge actually adds back to the capital replenishment. So if we wanted to even just, you know, take everything out next year, we can easily do that. So between... I hope that helps.
And also, so, I just for the last time, I just want to get your current exposure to both ITO and Ontario. What's the current value exposure, please?
For ITO, because we also need to protect the customer and his customer information, so permit us to skip that.
Okay.
On Ontario, the exposure has been written down no longer in our books, the only realizing assets.
So can you give me the value of that, please?
Also, permit us to skip that because we've guided on exposure to Ontario before. We guided on what we're expecting as recovery, and so the assets are there, and they are being recovered. But the most important thing is looking at the fact that it's no longer in our books, and therefore it doesn't pose any threat to us.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Let's progress with other questions if we have any.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We will now take our next question from Caitlin Byrne of Prudential Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Hi, sorry, I just wanted to follow up on the question I asked earlier on how the agency and digital is going to affect your costs going forward. So, how is this going to help drive your cost to income lower? And the second question I had asked was about the reason for the asset management division going backwards in Q1. Thanks.
Sorry, the reason for the second question?
For the reason for the asset management division, the MBAM division, going backwards in profit terms in Q1.
Okay, thank you. Okay. So the question around digital and our agency, there are two bits to it. So there's the revenue bit and then there's the cost bit. I think you focus on the cost bit. The primary benefit of our thrust into digital and agency is about growing our revs, our non-interest income revs. So growing our revs, diversifying our revenue stream. Now, in terms of what it means for cost, the earnings from digital or agency is very profitable. So if you look at the revs we make versus the cost that we charge, we are looking at cost-income ratios of less than 40%. So indeed,
the efficiency benefit from our push into digital and agency is significant. Layer that on top of the revenue potential, layer that on top of the diversification benefit, and the fact it's not capital consuming for most parts, the financial upside is significant.
Okay. Good afternoon. This is Kayode Akinkugwe speaking on the MBAM business. The primary reason for the drop in PBT between Q1 2018 and 2019 relates to further depreciation on some of our technology investments. About 3 years ago, we made major investments in overhauling our technology, and we rolled out the applications over a period of about 2 or 3 years. So since 2018 and a little bit into 2019, we will start seeing the peak of the depreciation coming through. So that's the primary reason.
Thank you, Kayode. Do we have more questions?
Thanks.
We will now take our next question from Tolu Alumutu of Telemer. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon again. I just have a follow-up question, please. Could you give us the figures for Stage 1, 2, and 3 loans as of the end of March, if possible? Thank you.
The figures as a year end and that of March are same.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Next question, please.
We will now take our next question from Segun Akinwale of Arm Securities. Please go ahead.
Okay, hi. Sorry, I'm back. I just want to clarify something on this and under your operating expenses called operational and other losses. It's about 5 billion from 926 million last year. I just want to know, is it one of that is going to happen in Q1, or what is the line really about, and what should we expect for it going to the rest of the year?
The bulk of what you have there relates to one-time charges around certain transformational initiatives that are ongoing. The program itself hasn't yet ended. But what that means, however, is while we might still incur some costs this year, these will be one-time charges relating to 2019. We also believe whatever it is you have in there reflects the most likely or worst-case scenario.
Okay, so you mean we can't have it go far higher than this anymore if it's the worst-case scenario?
So what you have in there is what has been incurred as at Q1. And you know, one-time charges, you recognize them as being incurred.
Okay.
But these are one-time charges as related.
Can you give more details on what this program is about so it's easier for us to estimate how much is likely to come from it?
I think I can touch on part of it, which is... We're going through a HR transformation exercise. And as part of that process, we've given staff the opportunity to leave on voluntary basis, and we've paid them off in doing that. That cost is partly what it is you're seeing there.
Oh, okay. So if I'm going to take this, what's the number of staff that you think has already benefited from this program, and how much are you looking at for that at settling?
There's a possibility that would still increase.
Okay.
But like I said, these are one-time charges. I've just discussed with you about the HR component, but there are other things that can come in. But overall, if you annualize, what you've seen in Q1 cannot get worse when you extrapolate for the end to the end of the year.
Okay.
In terms of specifics around number of people, unfortunately, I can't share that, if you don't mind.
Okay, thank you.
There are no questions at this time. I would like to hand the call back to Mr. UK Eke for any closing remarks. Please go ahead, sir.
Okay. Let me thank you all for your sustained interest in FBN Holdings PLC. We have shown very clearly by the numbers that we remain very resilient. We've also shown that we've got the courage to confront the legacy issues that we had highlighted 3 years ago. We have shown the results of that courage and determination to excel. We have also shown how we resolved all of them, which gives indication of our commitment to keep the promises we have made today. We are certain that we have the resources and we have the capacity to deliver. What is more important that I'd like to emphasize is that there's a whole lot more happening in the group that you will begin to see through P&L in the course of 2019. Now we have fully resolved the legacy issues, particularly around NPL. Again, I'd like to thank you, and we promise that at the next call for Q2 results, you'll begin to see better results from FBN Edge PLC. Thank you very much.
This concludes the FBN Holdings financial results call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.